Live from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, actor, author, and playwright, Inge Rameau.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And musical guest, Armando Compeon. I am Mark Legere, and now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am so excited about tonight's show. I have to tell you, well, right off the top of the bat, I want to thank Cal David and Lori Bono. I was at a party, and I got seated by Lori. She said, I'm going to seat Filippo right next to our guest. This was months and months ago, maybe even a year or so ago. And before dinner was served, our guest and I were crying and hugging. And interestingly enough, her husband was sitting on the other side of her. And he said, what's going on over there? And I thought he was going to be upset. And the next thing he says is, I want some of that. So the next thing you know, our guest and her husband are here today in the studio because she is our guest and her husband is our musical guest. And just wait, we have a show in for you that is so special. I already know it. And, you know, it's interesting because this seems to be how my life works if I pay attention. And so almost exactly a year ago, actually, I was invited out to Waterbury, Connecticut, actually, and I was invited to speak about The Little Dog That Could, my book. And when I was done talking about this story that's inspirational and all of that and moving at times and all that, a woman that was at the event, and I thought she might have looked familiar, came up afterwards with her husband on her arm, and he said that my wife has something she'd like to share with you. And she was very, she was beautiful. And I understand, I think she was in her 80s or something. And she stood there well-dressed and spoke so eloquently and shared how she's seen me perform so many times. And this is the first time she heard me talk about my book and that she'd like to gift me her book. And I said, well, thank you. And the next thing I know, her husband went to the car, came back, and handed me this book. And I said, thank you very much. And she autographed it for me, and off I went. And then I read the book on the plane on the way home. And I cried. And I cried, and I cried. The book is called A Child Lost, My Life's Journey from War-Torn Europe to Proud American, by Janina B. Navarskas. And I had no idea that this beautiful woman had experienced what she had experienced. And frankly, sadly, I had no idea that women all over the world from all different ages had experienced what she had experienced. And less than a year later, actually a few months later, I was introduced to our guest. And that's what happened. Within a few minutes, she started telling me a very similar story. And I thought, I can't believe it. I'm actually talking to a person where I didn't get a chance to chat with this woman. I just read her book. And now I think there should be so many more books like this. And I'm happy to say that our guest is not only going to share her story with us tonight, but she is writing a book. And so more women can know that they are not alone. More people can know that they are not alone. And more people can be sharing their secrets that can release them from their victimhood. In other words, sharing the hard stuff in order to heal ourselves and others. We'll be back with tonight's show, our guest and musical guest, all on the Life Changes Show after this.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sierra Campbell, and Alan Roderick Jones on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. You can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio, sitting here with Mark Lejeur.
Usually it's my job to come up with something quick and witty and funny, but not after that. Thank you for sharing, and thank you for reminding me why we do what we do and creating a safe space so that everyone feels welcome. So
yes.
Such
yes.
an important show tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for doing it with me. And so grateful for our guest for being here. She is so many things. Maybe first of all, brave. She's an actor, she's an author, and she's a playwright. She is Inge Rameau. Inge, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Oh, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you inviting me on this show. And quite frankly, you have touched me also. I am quite touched right now by what you said.
We have touched each other from the moment we met, and that's why I thanked Lori from the beginning. And, you know, it's interesting how I titled the show Sharing Secrets That Release You from Victimhood. And you said, you know, that's beautiful what you came up with. And what did I say? I said, it was you who inspired that.
And I don't remember saying it, but if I inspired it, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm so happy. And that's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about.
To inspire in this world, that we should have more of that.
Later on, we're going to talk a little bit about your play, Burn. But on the way to that, actually, when we were talking about the show, you wanted to make sure that there was a beginning, a middle, an end. And I said something about there really is none, because there are so many places, especially in your story, that we could start.
Mm-hmm.
You, in your already having inspired, while you have been living your life as an actress, you did Birthday Girl, Stiletto, The Young and the Restless, Days of Our Lives, Dark Justice, Fame, mm-hmm. you know, and then you went on to do other things, but now you are sharing the story of your life. First of all, how does that feel?
Well, it's still very, as much as I have talked about it, and with the play, I certainly brought it to light.
Mm-hmm.
It's even to this day, I feel very vulnerable
mm-hmm.
Talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It feels raw. It feels very expository.
Mm.
And I'm sure I get nervous also talking about it because there's always a lot of shame attached, past shame attached to many of the things that I experienced. However, having said that, I also have found it to be liberating because on the way, I have found so many people who have thanked me and who have shared their own story with me so that we can actually realize we're not alone. And I think what is so difficult is the feeling of feeling alone, as if you're the only one suffering, and you're sitting in this dark hole trying to negate what you have gone through as if it was your fault in some way.
You know, I was baffled when I first started sharing some of my funny stories growing up as an Italian-American and all of that. And to have people from different cultures come up to me and say, you're telling my story. And I thought, how is that possible? Because this is uniquely to me. And no, it wasn't. So the woman that I was talking about in the monologue, she was from Lithuania. So when I finally learned about that, I'm like, oh, some of the Lithuanians, or a lot of them, went through that. But then I meet you and you're from Estonia and you're saying, that's my story. And let me add to it.
Yeah. It is my story. It's amazing that you said that she was surviving war-torn
Yeah,
Europe.
I'm gifting you this book.
Oh, thank you.
And so, and then I look forward to yours. Absolutely, you'll be amazed or not, and that's mm-hmm. why this conversation is important. Mm-hmm. So, I don't even know where to start. Literally, you were born and labeled a displaced person.
Literally, I was. Yes, my mother escaped Estonia from the Russian takeover, from the communist takeover. And she was pregnant with me, but unbeknownst to her.
Wow.
She just wanted to get away. Estonia had its freedom for 20 years, and the Russians were taking over. The borders were being closed. She had 2 weeks to get out. She packed her little suitcases, got on one of the last trains out of Estonia into Germany, thinking that perhaps she would have some sort of freedom. Instead, she was rounded up, put into a internment camp, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. And then when the war ended, they didn't know what to do with all the refugees. So they created displaced persons camps, many of them in the old German barracks with barbed wire fences around.
Mm.
And that is where I was actually born, in one of them, in Nuremberg, mm. Germany.
Wow.
In one of those determined, yes.
So what
yes.
was it, just moments earlier, a concentration camp?
I don't believe it was a concentration camp. I believe they erected them, and some of them were actually barracks, army barracks.
Okay.
And then they enclosed them with barbed wire fences so that they would have some sort of accounting for all the refugees, because the crisis was enormous. When the Allies came in and when they saw what it was, they were astonished.
Well, not only were people in these camps, but they also were camps that were not meant to hold that many people.
Exactly. There was one camp called Wildflecken, in Wild Place, and they expected 2,000 people there. There were 20,000 people in the camp.
Wow.
And I remember, as I was growing up, sharing a huge, large room with 4 to 5 families.
Wow. It's interesting that you talked about one particular camp, but talk a little bit about how the experience was, because you experienced more than one.
Oh, yes. It was, well, I remember constantly being moved. But, you know, when you're a child, you think, oh, well, that's all somehow in your... you're dreaming about it, or maybe it wasn't that bad.
That couldn't have been possible.
It couldn't have been possible, exactly. After my mother's death, I found a handwritten log from her on one of those old brown papers that you use to dry your hands.
Oh, wow.
And she had meticulously put down September 1944, where she was in Gotenhafen.
Wow.
Then when she was in Nuremberg, how many months she was there, on to the next one, how many months, what year, what month. In 7 years, 11 times, we were moved.
Wow. So there was no way to really connect with people. You didn't have your family, and you were displaced in so many ways, and constantly displaced, continuously.
Continuously, yes. I remember the very first time we were moved. By this time now, I had already made a friend. I think I was about 2.5 or 3 years old. And I cried. We were screaming, reaching for each other.
Mm.
And of course, we were just torn apart. And after that, I probably numbed myself out a little bit, because I got used to being moved and not really making any kind of relationships with anyone.
Well, it's interesting, when we were talking, that word numb has come up several different times in used in different ways. And when we come back, we're going to talk about one of the other ways it was used in our conversation, which is unimaginable to me. And the fact that I'm talking to a woman who is so strong and powerful. As I put it on when I posted on Facebook, somehow from displaced person, you have found your place within your life. And I know that's after a lot of work. We'll be back with Inge Rameau and a little later on live music here in the studio with Armando Compian, all on the Life Changes Show right after this.
Hey guys, this is Michaela. So I'm here to tell you about the DNA Institute. If you haven't heard of it already, I wanted to let you in on it because it completely changed my life. A few years ago, I was 30 pounds overweight. I wanted a career, good friends, a loving family, and financial success, and I didn't have any of it, so I ate. Within 6 months, the DNA Institute treatment not only helped me lose the 30 pounds, it also rebalanced my hormones, healed my metabolic and digestive system, and made my higher functioning brain so loud it became impossible to overeat when I was full. Don't we all want that? So many of my friends and family turned to the Institute after they saw my success. All of them lost their desired weight, ranging from 8 to 60 pounds. I found this to be so different than anything I'd ever tried before, and it was easier than anything I'd ever done. It's not a supplement or a diet pill. It's a genuine, doctor-prescribed, custom medical treatment made just for you. It doesn't matter what your situation is or how much weight you have to lose. I believe the Institute will get you to your goal. My experience is that this is more than just a weight loss system. It's a biohack to a better way of looking, feeling, and living. When I started, I had never heard of the DNA Institute, but the fact that they've been in Beverly Hills since 1982 gave me a real peace of mind. Now that you've heard of them, click on the DNA ad at lifechangesshow.com and get your customized formula started today. Change your life like I changed mine.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino on our archive page at lifechangesnetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and our guest, Inge Rameau. And I realize that I have been talking so low, and because I'm so connected to wanting to be respectful and all of that. But you're strong. You're like, you go, Filippo, wherever you think you need to go. And I'm like, no, it's you. And you're like, I'm good.
I'll be embarrassed afterwards, maybe.
No, well, I hope not. You know, we're talking about your story already. We sense that there's no foundation being laid except for trauma and drama and constant movement and separation and all of that. And then things happened within those conditions. No proper schooling was on the one end, and on the other end, you know, not enough food, but also people doing certain things, like something that happened to you at the age of four.
Yeah, at the age of four. My mother thought she had put me into an attic where she created a beautiful little play area, and so that I could have my toys and my blanket and so on. And a man started to hide behind the beams and then get closer and closer. And basically he was ingratiating himself. I didn't like him at first at all. His energy was very dark, but I started getting accustomed to him. And so then one day he just kind of sat in my blanket, and he said, "Oh, little girl, you know, what are you doing there? I have some candy." And so he started giving me candy. Wow. And I said, "Oh, that's really nice." So I was taught to respect adults.
Yeah.
And not to question them. Authority was very important. Mm. And besides that, we were strangers in a strange land. Mm. Mm. So definitely we could not question authority. In any case, one day he came and he said, "I've forgotten my candy in my room downstairs." Oh. And he said, "Come with me." And I was a little, really torn, because my mother had told me not to leave the blanket. Mm. But I was also saying, okay, there's an adult here asking me to come with him, and I wanted the candy. Mm. I ended up in his room, And basically, he orally raped me, and I thought I would die. Mm. I literally thought I would die. I never forgot that moment. It was horrendous. And somehow I got out of there, and I found myself outside in the rain. And I looked up at the sky, and I opened my mouth. And what had happened was I knew if I didn't swallow, I would choke to death. So I had to swallow while he was orally raping me. And when I was outside, I looked up at the sky. I allowed the rain to fall into my mouth, and I tried to spit it all out. And I felt so dirty, and I felt I would never be clean again. I could not get that stain out of myself. And I felt responsible.
Yeah.
Because I had left that blanket. And my mother had told me not to leave that blanket. And I never talked about it until I was an adult.
You say you felt responsible because you left the blanket. And interestingly enough, as you got older, more things happened along the same lines.
Yes.
And you kept that to yourself because you felt like it was your fault.
It was
too.
My fault, yes. And then it was a stepfather. And, of course, it wasn't rape in my mind because it wasn't similar to what had happened. Mm. But it was games that we played. Mm. And then he swore me to secrecy. And then, of course, I did have a tremendous amount of guilt because somehow there was this triangular thing going on between me and him and my mother. And I knew I had to keep secrets. And ultimately, somehow, one person in the camps found out about it much later on in my life. And I was brought in front of a judge to talk about it, and I was very proud of myself that I never, ever uttered a word, and I never betrayed anybody.
This is at how old?
Then I was at 9 years old. 9 years old.
Unimaginable.
And
not just in front of a judge, but in front of the perpetrator.
He was there. And
a room full of people.
The courtroom was filled with people. The lights were bright. Everybody was gawking. My mother had received a subpoena. She had ignored it. Hmm. And the police came and banged on our door and forcibly moved us, me and my mother, took us to the courtroom, and I was clinging to her, and then I had to stand in front of the judge, and he tried to talk to me kindly, but I felt everyone's eyes on me, and I didn't want to start trouble. I didn't want to be a telltale, a tattletale.
Yeah. And you seem to have kept that not only your story, but you manifested a relationship where that person's way of being kept you a certain way.
Well, he had an idea of how a wife should be and how a woman should be.
Mm-hmm. And which he probably had been taught by his family or society at the time or
exactly.
Something.
Yeah, he is,
not to excuse that.
No, not to excuse. And he was a good man. There was, he didn't abuse me in any way. He loved me, but he kept me, he needed me to present myself in a way that was in his image of a woman rather than who I was as a human being or as a woman. And at first it was fine. I mean, I felt safe because now I was with somebody who loved me, who looked after me, I thought. But there was something missing. Something was missing. And I kept on wanting to reach for more. And he couldn't handle it. Mm. And that's why I ultimately left the relationship. Yeah.
You talk about keeping secrets. Actually, I think it's amazing when you told me that you shared with him before marrying him this story, which you had not shared. And yet it was something that was never spoken about, and he wouldn't have allowed you to share that story, would he?
It was very upsetting to me because I did not want to have secrets with him. I felt that if we were going to go ahead and have a relationship and get married, I needed to tell him one of my worst secrets about my stepfather. And I did. I was afraid to tell him in our apartment because I didn't know what he was going to do, whether he was going to get angry at me or anything like that. So I said, let's meet in a restaurant. I didn't tell him what it was. And as I shared it with him, he clamped up, he looked down, and he basically said, I never want to talk about this again. And that was that, shut down. You know, and I wasn't sure enough about myself. I felt, okay, I told him. He knows about it. And I guess my shame is real. I should be ashamed of what had happened.
Wow.
So it perpetuated the shame.
There was a time when that wasn't, it started to become not good enough for you. And I think it's interesting where you asked him to look at a woman that you started to see something in. Share with us that story.
My God. It was amazing because I didn't quite know what I was reaching for. I knew there was something.
You didn't have role models.
I didn't have a role model. Right. Exactly. And all of a sudden, my ex-husband and I, we were watching the Johnny Carson show. And it was 1971. He introduced J.P. Morgan as his first guest. She got on, and I was absolutely riveted. I was mesmerized. She started bantering with Johnny and coming back with sassy comebacks and funny, and he was laughing, and she wasn't this typical kind of a woman with batty eyelashes and all of that. She was strong. She was sassy. She was funny.
Yeah.
And she was feminine. I said, wow, that's it. And I told my ex-husband, I said, isn't she fabulous?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh.
He said, are you kidding me? She's a ball buster. A real man would never find her attractive. I said, oh, okay. Well, that was the beginning of the end.
Well, actually, it was the beginning of the end and the beginning of something else because there's an interesting thing here.
Little did I know that night as I was watching J.P. Morgan, my future husband, my current husband.
The one who's here in the studio.
The one who's in studio tonight.
Right.
He was her musical director and her bass player. And when she was singing, he was actually backing her up.
On the show that looking at her saying.
Yes. That's the woman.
That's the woman.
That's my model.
Wow.
And 5 years later, I met Armando.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's weird is what it is.
It's mind blowing. And if you hadn't had your process, if you didn't do your work, if you didn't come to the woman that you are, you wouldn't have been able to see her in that way or try and find yourself, the elements that you like about yourself that you were seeing in her.
Exactly. I don't think I could. I didn't know what it was.
Right.
But I was afraid of it. Yes. I was afraid of my own power. Yes. I was afraid of the fact that, oh, could I really be that funny and that powerful? Oh, no, 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 not me. Everybody else, but not me. Yeah. But I was still striving for it.
Well, and you did, and here you are. Thank you so much. And we'll talk a little bit more with our guest, Inge Rameau, when we come back. Dorothy Donahue is going to join us in the studio and with our Ask Dorothy segment. And later on, that same Armando Compion, who Inge saw on the Johnny Carson show, will be in the studio with us here live, performing all on the Life Changes show when we come back after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com. You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Barbara Morrison, and Kyle Cease at our archive on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Inge Rameau. And actually, before we went to the short break, we talked about J.P. Morgan. And the woman that you were looking at on TV, now you are friends with.
We are friends. Absolutely. We are friends. And, you know, I have told her the story. I told her the story when I first met her in 1981. I think 1980-81 is when I first met her. I was so nervous. Mm. Oh, here's my idol sitting here, you know. And she was just lovely, absolutely lovely. And yeah, Armando has been friends with her since 1970, 69, something like that. Yeah.
Wow, what a great story, and what an amazing, inspiring story to be able to get to this place, and you're still growing with it, and part of the growth has been your play, Burn.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Where you tell the story.
Burn. Yeah. I wrote Burn, and I performed it here. In fact, just a few doors down at the Actors Studio.
Oh, wow. Literally a few doors down.
Literally a few doors down for a three-week run. Armando did the music. Armando and Jimmy Varley did the music for it, the sound, I guess, sound design. And we had an amazing run for 3 weeks. And then I went to New York, and I did it over there, and I had a nice reception. And it was pretty sold out. I was very happy, but I was nervous about it at first.
Well, that seems to be a modus operandi. You didn't want to write the play.
No, I didn't.
And then you did it, and you didn't want to write the book, and here you are.
Well, I was told to write the book because the people who came to me after the play said, you have to put it down in a memoir. I said, oh, please, no.
Please, no, not that.
No,
anything
no,
but that.
Yeah. But here I am doing it.
What is the working title of the book?
Good Girl Burning.
Good Girl Burning. Wow.
Trapped within the code of silence.
Wow. Wow. Well, You're going to be seeing that, I trust, soon at ingeramo.com. Now, let me spell that for you. Inge is I-N-G-E-Z, Inge, and Ramo, R-A-M-E-A-U.com, ingeramo.com. And then if you lose that, then come to the Life Changes page where we have her listed, and you'll find a lot of information on her on that. And we look forward to adding more information about you, because you're just getting started.
Oh, thank you so much. And really, thank you again for inviting me on your show. I really do appreciate it.
It's been such a pleasure, and I look forward to more.
Yes, thank you.
Could I ask you one last thing?
Mm-hmm.
You are going to enter into another phase of your life, and that's going to be helping people. First of all, you already are, but you want to help people that have either had similar stories. Yes. And so you don't know what that looks like yet, but I just wanted to put that out there. And what does that mean to you at this point?
It means a lot to me, because I feel that we need to take our experiences and embrace them and use them as our power.
Mm-hmm.
And with that power, we can then pass on that power. If I can be a J.P. Morgan for somebody else who never even meets me, then my job will be done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I want to do it over and over again, of course, but I really feel that's my calling right now, more than anything else. If I can talk to people and tell them my experiences, and if they can feel that they're not alone, and that it can be not overcome but embraced.
I think you are not a J.P. Morgan, but you're an Inge Ramo for some people, for many people, and may they come to get to know you so they could tell you.
Thank you.
And you can learn more about her at ingeramo.com. Thank you so much, Inge. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, my name is William, and I live in San Diego, and I'm self-employed. I am stressed to the max, as I feel like the whole world has gone crazy. My friends are consistently calling and wanting to talk doom and gloom, and I just don't want to have these kind of conversations anymore. I'm working 16-hour days, and I'm exhausted because I just cannot sleep well, with my mind continuing to focus on what still needs to be done. What can I do to bring back some peace and clarity into my life?
Dear William, there are a lot of interesting things going on in today's world, and many people are experiencing extreme stress by focusing on all that is wrong. I believe the truth is that things are not getting worse, and that more is simply being revealed than ever before. This is truly a magical time of intense change and a time of awakening. There are many people who are focusing on finding solutions instead of focusing on everything that is wrong. Check out the meetup groups in your area, and I believe that you will find result-oriented people who will inspire you instead of exhaust you. Working 16 hours a day will exhaust anyone, so the first thing to consider is how to cut back your hours to a more reasonable number. Being self-employed, you are the boss, so let's find a way to get everything done in a shorter business day. One way to do this is to prioritize your task and do the highest priority ones first. I intuit that your friends consistently calling may be taking up a lot more of your working hours than you realize. And since you don't want to have these kinds of conversations anyway, you may wish to choose to not answer the phone unless it is a business call. You might want to start working with a life coach who could help you prioritize your task and help you find ways to get work done more efficiently. You could also take a good, clear look at what work actually gets done in your 16-hour days by writing a short report at the end of the day. And you can minimize any distractions such as unnecessary phone calls. I believe that it would be a great idea for you you to put together a daily work schedule and adhere to it as much as possible. Your phone can be your digital calendar and will help you prioritize your work. As for quieting your mind enough to fall asleep, you may wish to use a self-hypnosis tape to assist you in letting go. I trust you will find a way to be more productive in fewer hours per day, leaving you time to enjoy people who are like-minded and joyful.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back with our musical guest, Armando Compian, on the Life Changes Show right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, lifechangesnetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
And we're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Inge Rameau. And joining us in the studio, you've heard a little bit about him already. Actually, there's so much more I could say. Let me just start by saying he is a bassist, bass player, for those of you who don't know what that is, a vocalist and composer. He is Armando Compian. Welcome, Armando, to the show.
Thank you. You're cheering yourself on.
Yes. That's brilliant. I wish we had the camera on that. and wow, you know, this is the first time we've had the guest and the musical guest be in a beautiful relationship. I understand you have now. Or wait a minute, let me get your side of the story. You know what? Save it. Say it in a song.
I will. Actually, these songs. We'll say it, hopefully.
Okay. Well, you know, actually, one of the things that won't be said in the song, but people will be able to hear, because there are just too many to mention the people that you have worked with. We mentioned, obviously, one, J.P. Morgan, but so many people. Just amazing. But I thought it was really interesting, too, that I know some of the people. I'm like, oh, I should have called. Like, I know the writer of Because I Said So, the film, and you did the music for that, or you played in it as well. And then Seventh Heaven, and you know, the Johnny Carson show, and the Drew Carey show, and then films like the Yaya Sisterhood and All the King's Men and LA Confidential, and wow,
I walked the line.
Yeah. I mean the list, Yuli's Gold, I mean, we can go on and on. Memphis, I mean, wow. I was impressed by you when we first met, again thanks to Cal David and Lori Bono. Thank you. And then I got to sing with you, and I was nervous. And I messed up the lyrics. And you know what you said? You were so kind. You looked up at me and said, "Wow, you sound great."
Well, you know, you're drinking up wine. You know, You did sound great. Your voice is amazing.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And you sounded great, even though you and Cal were just there, just having a good time. Did you learn this all on your own? Because you started learning the guitar by yourself.
Yes.
Now, but you had somehow because...
Because my family was all musician, and it was my first conscious thought in the crib was hearing my family rehearsing downstairs in the studio and thinking, what is that? I want in on it. You know, I was bouncing around. And so there was nothing but music in the house, instruments, and listening to my father practice the violin, my brothers playing jazz, and, you know, it was just it was all music. That's all there was.
Do you remember what first instrument you first put your hands on?
Well, my dad tried to teach. He did teach everybody to play the violin.
Oh, wow.
And he started me at 5 or 6 years on the violin, and I cried my way through a couple of months of it. And I did one recital, all open strings, the song, and I hated it. He knew I wasn't going to do it.
Were you playing a sad violin?
It was extremely sad, extremely sad, depressingly sad. And then piano, and then I played trumpet in the band, and I took up the guitar when I was 12 or 13 and started forming bands of my own. And I switched to bass at 19 or 20, you know, and that was it. I stayed on the bass.
And you stayed on the bass. Yeah. Wow. I find the bass such a fascinating instrument. And the interesting thing about you is your musical director. Usually bass players aren't musical directors.
That's
so
true.
That's a whole other animal. Mm-hmm. So how did that happen for you?
Because the first gig I did with JP was in New Orleans, and it was just a drummer and I. There was a big band there that needed to rehearse. We had to rehearse with them, and I had no idea. My reading was not that great back then, but I was so my instincts were so great, and I was young and full of aggressive juices that the way I was playing was kind of—
Is it piss and vinegar? Is that what you were going to
say? Thank you. Thank you. Piss and vinegar.
Aggressive.
That's exactly what I was looking for. And— I wasn't sure about the piss part because on the radio.
You could say it.
Right. So pee pee and vinegar. So, because the way I was playing was making the band together, she asked me, "Do you want to conduct?" I said, "Okay."
So, wow.
Yeah. So then I had to learn all the music and know how to rehearse big bands. I had never done that in my life. I just said yes and I did it. You know.
Wow.
And I'm all the better for it. I think, you know, just being put through all that humiliation that I went through the first couple of times, you know, with these big bands like in Vegas or
School of Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
I mean, like, in Vegas and Tahoe, that's where you learned it.
They knew I was scared. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but then I learned all of the, you know, being raised in a musical family, you know, personalities and, you know, how to maneuver yourself through all these people. And I got it, you know, once I got it.
Wow. Boy, you sure did. Where did the writing come from?
Well, that's just, I have no idea. I just did it. You know, a friend of mine named Otis Hale, when I was in 1968 or 9, he was the first person I knew and that wrote tunes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a tune with me, and I just did it. I don't even know that it's proper, but I've just been writing ever since, you know, so.
Oh, we know by now. Yeah. It's proper.
Well, I hope so.
It's yeah, and we like it, actually. And we're so glad that you're here to share some of it. Actually, it's not just you here. Do you want to introduce? I know these are friends. I could tell from the way you all treat each other.
Yes,
these are friends.
you mean the
you know what I mean?
Degrading behavior with. Yes, on piano, a very good friend of mine, and also a great composer, and not to mention a great farmer.
Farmer.
Yes.
Oh,
he's a double baler. He carried two bales of hay at once.
Wow.
But no, he's an amazing musician and a wonderful person. Rich Eames on piano.
Welcome, yeah, Rich. Yes. Yay! Yeah, and the crowd's roaring. Right.
And on saxophone also has been playing with me, including did a JP gig on the road also. We've been playing together. He did the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson for years and has played with John Beasley. He's done so many dignified gigs that I would have no part of because he wouldn't allow me there, is Tom Peterson on saxophone. Yeah?
Welcome.
And
welcome,
one of my oldest friends, Lee and I have been playing together since 1970.
He doesn't look that old.
Well, he's 103. he does a lot of yoga. Lee and I have been playing together since 1974.
Wow.
Yeah. And we have played every possible variation of music and on the road and good stuff and bad stuff, and still here.
He's still tolerating me.
Are these
gents part of when you go out and do Texas Brown, your band? Are these gents part of that too?
They are.
And many others.
Yes, that's with the horn section, electric guitar, electric bass.
Yeah.
And I wear tights on that gig.
Yeah, you know, I'm learning when to believe you and when to not. That one I believe. Because you used to work with Peter Allen. Yes. I mean, I'm not stereotyping.
Right. But the tights part. That's right.
No, I mean, okay, well, why don't we just drop it right there? Well, let's hear some music.
You don't want to mess around with it, right?
No, let's hear some music. Actually, this first song, tell us about it.
Okay, this first song is entitled "I'll Always Need to Be With You." Both of these songs are really mellow and laid back. You guys didn't want anything loud in here. And this first song, my stuff is kind of jazzy, bluesy, if you want to, put a label on it. This first song actually sounds really sad, but it's actually a really positive and happy song.
Okay.
Well, you were going to say?
So anyway, it
has to do with meeting the love of your life and actually not realizing it at first.
Oh.
And then finally getting clarification that, in fact, you had.
Okay. Well, then here's Armando Campion and these fine gentlemen performing "I'll Always Need to Be With You" live here on the Life Changes Show here at Studio NoHo.
Have I lost touch? Is this too much for me to handle? Or am I just afraid to trust to have you by my side? Oh, how I tried and tried to hide the thrill of your love for me. Even tonight, my dreams had come true. Day I set eyes on you. Now you inside, there's no reason to hide. I only wanna be with you. Sometimes I cry at the thought of your kiss. And if I hadn't opened my heart, think of all the love I would have missed. All the love I would have missed. Too much But I must have your touch just to keep on living. You know, ever since I've been with you, I can't stop giving, baby. No, I just can't stop giving, baby. Sometimes I cry at the thought of your kiss, and if I hadn't opened my heart, think of all the love I would have missed. I only want to be with you. I'll always need to be with you, baby. Always need to be with you. Always need to be with you. It's not you inside. There's no reason to hide. No, no, baby. I only need to be with you.
And I'll always need to be with you, with Rich Eames on piano, Tom Peterson on sax, and Lee Spath on drums. Thank you so much. You all fit into each other like comfortable shoes. I you're all nodding, but nobody can see you. So
good.
Say something.
That's good. No, that's. I can't think of a better way to explain. Comfortable shoes are good.
Old comfortable. I didn't say that. Did I?
These shoes here alone are 20 years old. But
are they comfortable though?
Very extremely. Right.
Do you know that song is actually not available? So people got to hear it here on the Live Changes Show.
That's right.
So thank you for bringing that in and sharing that.
Well, it's my pleasure.
But there are plenty of songs available for people to hear. There's a CD, Just for a Thrill, Armando Campion, and then Texas Brown, Soul Zone. And these are available wherever music is sold. But if people want to learn more about Armando, they can go to armandocampion.bandcamp.com.
Yeah.
It just feels like I needed to keep
up. That's right. I know. You got to keep the accent happening.
So armandocampion.bandcamp.com. Armando is Armando. Campion, C-O-M-P-E-A-N. First of all, it's a pleasure to know you. And as I'm getting to know you, you're a funny guy. You have so much to offer, and thank you for sharing it through your music. Now, speaking of so much to offer, there's a story about this next song.
This next song is entitled Changing Lanes.
Yes, and what would this be about?
Well, it's not about driving, as much as it sounds like. This is a song about being with a person. Whether you're a female with a man or a man with a woman or whatever, that is constantly reinventing themselves.
Oh,
never satisfied with too much of the same thing. And you know, for men especially, you know, that's always like, now what, you know? And
really?
Yeah, you just can't think like, you think everything is a certain way. And so this song is about how that at first is an irritant, but it becomes something that you need. And it becomes a part of your life to be with somebody like that, including myself. I live like that now as well.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. Is this somebody in particular that we're talking about?
I can't think of anybody in particular. Not right off the bat.
Well, we'll leave it at that. Why don't we
with your interview and all that, right?
With,
you don't know this, but before Inge was this dignified writer, she used to work in a car wash. No, I'm just kidding, right?
Can't believe it. What, should we have a rim shot on that? Is it? Yes.
Always really vintage.
Or a groan.
Yeah, or a groan. Right,
all right. So with that,
Changing lanes, right?
Yeah. I bet Inge has her version of changing lanes, but that's a whole other story.
She loves this song.
Here is Armando Campion performing Changing Lanes live on the Life Changes show here at Studio NoHo.
You always change your lanes on me. Just when I thought I knew we were going, you changed the directions on me. When I was sure everything was really flowing, you always change your lanes on me. With you, there's always something going down. You're changing the way things are going for me. I'm thinking we're going straight. You wanna go around. You told me that you looked at your life like a book of faces. Changing lanes on me, just enough to make me go wild. Don't slow anything down for me, baby. You can forget about changing your style. It's a change that I enjoy. And now when you change lanes on me, babe, I know exactly where I'm going. Now when you change lanes on me, babe, I know exactly where I'm going. Changing lanes on me. Keep on
Armando Campion, Rich Eames, Tom Peterson, Lee Spath. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. It's really a pleasure.
I'm ready to order another round, so would you guys do it? No. I feel like I'm at the best jazz club in town. Thank you for turning the studio into all of this beautifulness.
Yes.
Wow. Actually, that song is available, actually, on your Texas Brown Soul Zone CD. Right?
Yes.
Again, armandocampion.bandcamp.com. And anywhere you're going to be performing, like, next, where we can come see you all or you or?
Not anything nearby. In my living room.
In your living room. Okay.
Right. Can't anybody come over there.
All right. Let's do.
Nothing really eventful as of now.
Okay. At least open to the public. Yeah. That's for sure. Well, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to actually meet all of you and to hear you all and to just really enjoy that. So once again, Armando Campion, thank you so much. Honored. And thank you for bringing Rich Eames and Tom Peterson and Lee Spath. And I look forward to seeing you all again. And also a big thank you to our guest, Inge Rameau. Of course, I'll be seeing you again, too. I won't go there. And you know, we wouldn't be able to do all this in this way if it wasn't for Brent Hahn here at Studio NoHo making this all possible in this way. So a big thank you to Brent Hahn, our technical director. And on behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, our producer, Mark Leger, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. And visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.